Good day and welcome to the new and improved Mad Tower Radio, broadcasting to you live from where we are proud to show off to you our new logo today. I'm joined to you by a hot cup of coffee and my co-host, Christian. How are you doing today, Christian?
Doing fantastic now that I've been in washed with Romtha.
Yeah, you have a Romtha update for us?
I do. I spent the week going over her videos, doing a little bit of her reading to try and sort of assert myself in her understanding, and it is ridiculous.
Please educate me.
It's a lot of this fast-talking, like, pseudo-science, esoteric nonsense. Like, You could recreate any one of her lectures if you just sound like, if you open your mind and allow the fourth energy and the silver moon to enter into your dreams, you too will find enlightenment. It's a lot of shit like that.
See, I see what I mean, though, when I was saying that she just gets up there and talks about nothing?
Yeah, no, she just promises a lot of things and then she waggles around them with ever like actually telling me how to do them. Like last summer she was offering this course on how to like energize all of your individual atoms so that you can bring your body and consciousness into like the meta plane so that you can reincarnate infinitely before you die.
Christ.
But she never told me how to do it. She was like, come to the course last summer in Yelma, and I'll show you how to live forever.
Of course.
Or, she talked to me a lot about dreams and how to access, like, the dream plane, which is pretty interesting. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And the weirdest ones where she would have people come up and tell their stories about how like they found the teachings and they used her techniques. There's this girl. She was a doctor from some foreign country that she comes to the United States to learn and practice medicine, and she's like, yeah, I have these dreams about my patients, like right before they die. Yeah.
Huh.
It's happened a couple times where I'll like have this really severe case and I'll be really stressed out about it, and then I'll see them in my dream that night and they'll be dead the next day.
Oh.
And I'm like, Romtha's like harvesting their souls for energy.
Hmm.
I don't like it.
Yeah. And because as soon as she reveals like, oh, this is how you do it, she can't make money off of them anymore because they'll know it's a fucking scam.
But the lady, she cited a bunch of techniques she was taught. She was like, I can find peace. I can, like, not be scared with myself because of these classes that I took with her. So she might be giving the goose to some people, but I don't know.
But that's a no for telekinesis and astral projecting?
A no for telekinesis. A kind of a yes for astral projection and a definite yes for infinite reincarnation. She promised me I could live for 100,000 years if I went to her course.
No, but did this doctor lady say, like, oh yeah, she taught me infinite reincarnation?
No. She taught her, like, positive thinking. And
Yeah. Yeah, because I need fucking Shamtha over there to fucking charge me $1,500 to learn how to just take a chill pill.
It's essentially, it's a lot of just, like, self-actualization, like, trusting and believing in yourself stuff.
Ugh.
When you boil it down to its non-mystic truths, but it's pretty damn interesting.
Let me put it out there for everybody. You can learn this stuff without joining a cult. It's pretty cool.
But you don't get the social club aspect. You don't get the t-shirt.
What, the Romtha Class of 2020 shirt?
Shit.
Christ.
I wonder if she's... You said they closed her down last episode for the pandemics, right?
She decided to close down.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. But no, okay. I was going to say, just out of frame on, like, that doctor lady saying all these powers she learned from Romtha. there's Romtha pointing the fucking heat right at her.
Jesus Christ.
Or like, in true Romtha fashion, maybe like a bow with an arrow drawn right off camera.
Now, I wouldn't recommend the episodes for their teachings, but I would recommend them for the god-awful transitions and, like, Microsoft PowerPoint-ness of them. Like, very entertaining watch. And they're all bite-sized, like 10 minutes or so.
I bet if you go back a couple years and click on, like, a Romtha video, it'll open with, like, that classic Windows Movie Maker blue and white text.
Yeah, like, I was watching them from about 7 years ago, and they've got that vibe.
The text is, like, a little spin.
No, like, the best one. She's, like, hits this Christ pose, and she talks about, like, enlightenment, and then it does the transition where your body, like, melts away, like falling sand.
What the fuck?
It was like, great.
like from Infinity War?
Kind of like Thanos Infinity snaps. War.
Oh my god, I don't feel so good, Mr. Romtha.
Mr. Romtha.
Oh, what a fucking loon.
And I was just saying this in the green room before the episode. All of the comments are disabled on these videos, but some of them, she forgets or something, and every one of them has at least one, you fucking idiots. How is it like 2020 and you're falling for this cult?
Oh my god. Well, I'm glad that people are awake out there. At least a little bit, you know.
No, Romtha's gonna vaporize their YouTube channel.
I'm waiting for her to vaporize our YouTube channel.
Truly, she does get, like, at least 1,000 views per vid and way more subs than us, so maybe we should, you know, offer astral projection.
Honestly, maybe we should offer her on the show. Romtha, if you're out there, if you're listening, email us, hit us up. We would love to have you on the show. No bad blood, even though I think you're a little wacky. But yeah. I'd never pass up the opportunity to talk to a Lemurian elite warrior such as yourself.
Yeah, if you ever find yourself vanity searching yourself on YouTube, come give us a call.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure that's not at all out of the realm of possibility, vanity searching herself. But I don't think she has to do it on YouTube, because most of the juicy footage she wants to see is, like, in her private archives, like the blind archery and shit.
The forbidden, like, LSD tag in the slave labor mines, yeah.
The blacklisted stuff. Oh my god. Well, let's move on from Romtha. Blessed be her name. I got a cryptid for you today.
Okay.
It's kind of a jobber, but I still thought it was some interesting stories to tell about this one. This creature is known as this specific instance of it is called the Jabafofi. Or Jabafofi. I don't know.
Okay.
But it's a giant spider that lives in the Congo.
Like, how giant?
So this is why I wanted to talk about this one, because it's not like they're like, oh yeah, it's like towering above the canopy and it's like a horror movie monster. But they're like, no, these shits are like the size of dogs, bro. Watch out.
Oh, the domestic cryptozoology. It's just like creatures we haven't found yet.
Yeah, yeah. Or like ancient species that could have survived, you know, mm-hmm. Something like that. Which I wholeheartedly, full-fledged agree, like, could happen, you know. So mm-hmm. This one, probably not too far out of the realm of possibility. The oldest account of the Jabafofi in the Western world was from a English missionary named Arthur Symes. And so a little lesson I learned trying to do research for this was... just because someone has a name on the internet doesn't mean they have a Wikipedia page. I was like, oh, English missionary Arthur Symes. So I Googled Arthur Symes and just like 15 doctor's offices in London came up. I'm like, nah, I don't think you guys are who I'm looking for. But yeah, not every little loser from history who has his name written down as a Wikipedia page. And it kind of sucks. But anyway, Mr. Arthur Symes was en route to a village on the shore of Lake Nyasa in Uganda, exploring as he traveled when several of his porters became ensnared in a huge sticky web that hung from one tree to another and down to the ground. While in the process of cutting his porters from this web, which was incredibly difficult to cut through, two large spiders with a leg span of around 4 feet appeared and attacked the men trapped in the web. Symes fired his pistol at the spiders, and they hurried away. Symes rescued his porters from the web, but the damage was already done. Within minutes of being rescued, the men became feverish, and at the sight of their bites became swollen. They died shortly afterwards. So, I don't know. Like, I believe these because there were spiders that big a long, long, long time ago.
Have you seen the spiders that eat birds that we know about?
I haven't seen them, but I know of them because I don't intentionally like to go out of my way to look at spiders.
Well, there's some big boys that we have like cataloged and named.
Yeah, they're real big. Also, just a little disclaimer, if you watch the actual YouTube video when we put it up, like, don't be scared. I'm not going to flash a bunch of pictures of gross spiders. I figured in the spirit of not inflicting arachnophobia upon everyone, I'd put up photos of horribly funny CGI spiders. So, you don't have to be scared that there's going to be a bunch of gross spiders on screen. Do not worry.
Can I make a confession to you?
Please.
The sci-fi movies, Eight-Legged Freaks, there's like 4 of them. I adored those movies
growing up. Eight-Legged Freaks is a classic.
Absolutely.
Eight-Legged Freaks was what turned me on to horror. In a lot of ways.
Really?
Yes, dude. Because it was like quote-unquote horror, but it was like lighthearted action comedy horror, you know? I watched that movie when I was like 8.
Oh, yeah.
And me and my brothers, after watching that movie, we just became like obsessed with that scene in the mall where everybody's just grabbing shit in the mall and trying to kill the spiders. Or the part where they're on dirt bikes, like racing the spiders. That's the best. Like,
yeah.
Eight-year-old me was like, this is the coolest fucking thing in the world. I want to fight giant spiders.
I could live my whole life just reviewing and loving sci-fi horror movies, like from the channel.
Eight-Legged Freaks is a great movie. Like, not even in like a so bad it's good way. I just love that movie. It is awesome.
So, what year did this original account come from? How old is this story?
1890.
Okay. Have there been any contemporary big boy spider sightings?
Another well-known documented sighting came from R.K. Lloyd and his wife in 1938, where they were driving down a road when they spotted... what they first thought to be a monkey. However, as they drove closer, they were in astonishment to find it was a spider as big as a jungle cat. They estimated the leg span was 5 feet. Christ. The Lloyds were typically seen as people of good character and were quite familiar with the wildlife in Africa. Yeah. So, like, it's just a bunch of, like, one-off sightings.
So, do you personally have a fear of spiders or a dislike of them?
my relationship with spiders is that we can coexist. Just don't, like, don't be in the house, or don't be in the part of the house that I'm using. You can have the basement, you can have the attic, and even then stick to the corner. But if you try and act up, you're going to get your ass squashed.
That's, I think, the best relationship anybody can hope to have with a spider.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you're minding your own business, bro, more power to you.
But
I'm not going to stomp on you just because I can. You know, I'm not into the whole bug torturing thing. But, like, if you're trying to flex on me, you're going to get fucked up.
How big does a spider get to be before it voids that contract? Like a dinner plate?
As soon as the spider is big enough to look like it has some meat on it, then I'm like, all right, if I see it's kill on sight. Like, if I look down at the spider and I can see him looking back up at me,
Christ, that's too much.
You're getting fucking smashed. Except jumping spiders. They're pretty cute.
Oh, I did not expect it to go that way. I thought that was another kill on sight addendum.
No, have you ever seen the baby jumping spiders? They're kind of cuties.
No desire to see a baby jumping spider.
Oh, you'll be fine.
The only
jumping spiders are pretty cute.
The only spider I can enjoy. Yeah, the one that dances. I like that one.
That's the jumping spider.
And I like the one that makes, like, the cave trap.
Look at homeboy here.
Oh, he's cute. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
But none of them have the crawl on me pass.
Oh, yeah. The dudes who are, like, opening their mouths to reveal a spider, I'm not about that.
Yeah. I'm not into it. I don't want any part of it.
Would you domesticate one? Would you keep a beast in your home as a pet?
No. No, I wouldn't. The closest I'd get to that is I'd go over to my friend's house and I'd be like, oh, cool tarantula, bro. And then just have this sense of unease whenever it was like out from under its rock. And
understandable.
Yeah, but if he was ever like, oh, I'm gonna pull this shit out, bro, like, want to see me hold the spider, I'd be like, fuck no.
No.
You know, that being said, I do try to like conquer my fear a little bit, you know. And there's this YouTube channel I subscribe to called Exotics Lair, and it's this dude who just owns like massive amounts of tarantulas and breeds them and stuff.
Come on, dude.
And I watch it because it's interesting. It's a very interesting channel, and I'm trying to extend an olive branch to spiders, you know.
So it's this creature. He's a jungle spider.
Yep, he's a jungle spider, but pretty much like the natives are just like, yeah, bro, it exists.
It exists.
Like So this one dude, his name was William J. Gibbons. He went out and... So he was actually on a cryptid search for this fucking dinosaur that lives in the Congo.
Yes.
But he came up on the locals and was talking to them. And William J. Gibbons, another guy, claimed to be a famous naturalist and cryptozoologist. No Wikipedia page. So I don't know when this was, if this guy's dead or alive or what, but he says in his account, on this third expedition to equatorial Africa, I took the opportunity to inquire with the natives if they knew of such a giant spider. They did indeed. They speak of the Jaba Fofi, which is a giant or great spider. I like the term great spider. That just, I don't know, makes it sound way cooler. They described a spider that is generally brown in color with a purple mark on the abdomen. They grow to quite an enormous size with a leg span of at least 5 feet. The giant arachnids weave together a layer made of leaves similar in shape to a traditional pygmy hut, and spin a circular web said to be very strong between two trees with a strand stretched across a game trail. Those giant ground-dwelling spiders prey on diminutive forests, antelope, birds, and other small game.
Antelope?
I don't think an antelope is small game.
Nah, if dude can catch, like, a jungle boar, that's not...
No. An antelope? Yeah, I don't think so. The spiders are said to have laid white peanut-sized eggs in a cluster.
No.
And the natives give them a wide berth when encountered, but have killed them in the past. The giant spiders were once very common, but are now a rare sight.
Okay.
Yeah, so a lot of the natives are just like, yeah, they used to be here, like, there used to be way more of them, but they're pretty much dead. You know? One man claimed that when he was young, he saw a huge tarantula-like spider attack and kill a dog. Then it dragged it back into the jungle. He estimated that if the spider would have been capable of standing on its back legs, it would have been as tall as a human.
I don't really want to conjure the idea of a spider on its back legs.
No, neither do I. Those creatures were meant to exist horizontally.
It's like those shitty YouTube videos where you see, like, anaconda eats kid.
What the fuck? I haven't seen that part of YouTube. Are you sure you're not on Live Leak?
It's definitely YouTube. It's all fake. It's all, like, crusty CG type stuff.
Oh, the one, like, the kind of stuff I was sending you yesterday?
Yes. I'm not watching actual people get eaten on the internet.
Okay. In another village, the people believed that a spider was responsible for abducting and probably killing a child.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, I'm the asshole. Okay. Whoops.
Yeah. Here it is. So here's one thing. Like, a lot of people are like, oh... these stupid tribesmen, like, they probably just saw a monkey and thought it was a fucking giant spider or something because it was moving so fast. But, you know, you gotta think they lived there their whole lives. That'd be like if you and me were out in the woods and, we thought we saw, like, it'd be like if we mistaked a deer for something else. You know?
Well, while us here in, like, metropolitan areas aren't the most, like, nature-inclined, I do think you sort of get a sense for the kind of shapes and creatures that are in your area, just, like, almost subconsciously. So, yeah, these are all outside reports, you're saying? Like, oh, they don't know what they saw. They're mistaking things.
Yeah, like, there are people who are like, no, they're mistaking things. Gotcha. It was probably a monkey, blah, blah, blah. But, like,
no,
you know, if these people are seeing monkeys as common as we see deers, you know?
Man.
Are you gonna see a deer moving really fast and be like, oh, that was a tarantula? That was a giant spider.
Yeah, have respect for the people who live in that world, for sure.
You know, but it got me thinking to look into some more international giant spiders encounters.
Mm-hmm.
And so during the Kokado Track campaign, 1942 to 1943, in World War II, an Australian soldier came upon a large web 10 to 15 feet across. Within this web, he saw a puppy-sized spider, and he described it as being all black, with a thick body, with hair like a tarantula.
Mm.
Now, here's a That's not the only war story we have about giant spider encounters. So go ahead and get comfy and throw on some Creedence Clearwater Revival for this next part of the discussion.
No, not
a person known only by the username Mr. Maxima claims that their father-in-law said that while he was on a scouting mission in Vietnam as part of a five-man team, the team encountered massive spiders that had bodies the size of dinner plates. Not the whole leg span. The body was the size of the dinner plate. And he estimated the total length of the legs to be 20 to 30 inches. The team opened fire on the spiders with their M16, and although they had been hit by bullets, he claimed the spiders were still moving around. He also said that the spiders were often seen near water sources, which would mean that this person saw the spiders on multiple occasions in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Another report comes from a woman named Debbie, who says the father of one of her friends, while serving in Vietnam, had walked into the bush to perform his daily duty. He noticed a very large spider web, and it was the color of cotton and thread-like, covering a 10 to 15 foot area horizontally and vertically, including a tree. As he was looking over this impressive web, he then saw a black spider the size of a small dog, only a few feet from his head. It had thick legs and a very bulky body. So, yeah, if, I'm opening fire too. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. Well, that's the important part of all these stories, is they immediately start blamming.
Yeah. And that's not the only cryptid sighting in Vietnam. Always. There's also the rock apes, which maybe we'll talk about one day.
Okay. It's good to think that, you know, before they get shipped off, they're like, listen, boys, you're going to see some things, and I'm not just talking communists. We're talking big spiders.
Well, have you ever heard of camel spiders?
I've become unfortunately familiar with the camel spider, yes.
So one of my friends, he served in Afghanistan, and he said that the camel spiders will start sprinting towards you.
Mm.
So that they can be in your shadow and cool off.
If these dudes have attained, like, tactics, that's too much. They can't be suffered to live on this earth anymore.
You're saying we need to destroy the camel spiders?
Anything that understands makes me uncomfortable. I don't like it.
Rise of the Planet of the Spiders.
It's my own personal hell.
So let me bring you to a sighting from Missouri, which comes from an older gentleman.
Good old Missouri.
And he says, I'm lucky to go fishing almost every weekend, wife allowing. So I know what kind of animals live around here. I have plenty of experience around the woods and the river. It was around noon. I sit down a few minutes for a smoke when I start hearing dry leaves moving on the left. I turn my head to where I heard the noise, and I see a huge, long, hairy pair of legs grabbing my canteen that I had just placed there a few seconds ago. Sheesh, it scared the bejesus out of me. I almost swallowed the smoke. The incident only lasted a few seconds, and the man wasn't able to get many details of the creature. He says it was fast. It felt like when a spider catches its prey. I can tell you the hairs on the legs looked black, very thick. Attached to the legs, it reminded me of the quills of a porcupine. I guarantee you that it was not a porcupine. Porcupines don't have long legs like that. You seen those spiders from the cartoons where they come out of the quicksand? Something like that.
It just sounds like that spider wanted a drink. Just looking for a sip.
He was thirsty, and said the giant spiders are known to frequent watering holes.
I mean, do you have any familiarity with spider life? Like, I know, I think it's like crocodiles and alligators will continue to grow indefinitely, as long as they have the food source to be able to facilitate that growth.
Spiders regenerate legs? Missing legs? Not much of a problem for spiders. Coming from the Scientific American blog.
That the spiders have infinite and unknowable power.
Don't name the thing, guy. Spiders may amputate their legs as a defensive strategy.
Another thing about the spiders is, why are their legs so hairy? What does it do?
I don't know.
Get these men.
I don't know why you need hair, bro.
Yeah.
A Gillette. Yeah, looks like they can regen their legs.
That's too much power.
That is very much power. Yeah, I was reading something about their, like back in the ancient times, the giant spiders were only able to exist because of their, there was way more oxygen in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So
that allowed bugs to be bigger, yeah.
Yeah. And that they'd, the way their lungs, they have like two types of lungs. They have book lungs. And I was reading about the book lungs, but I couldn't really understand them because I have a walnut brain. But then I was reading that they also have like just a tube system that runs throughout their whole body that passes oxygen.
Yeah. They breathe through their skin, kind of, or whatever approximates to disgusting spider skin.
Mm-hmm.
Hate it.
But yeah, that's giant spiders, man. That's the Jabba Fofi hip hop beats to study to.
The Jabba Fofi and why you should never go outside again.
Yeah, why you should never go outside again. But, you know, just watch out for spiders. You could go my route, try and extend them the olive branch. You know, there's no reason we need to hate each other. We can coexist. We all know that the true enemy here is house centipedes.
Yeah, no, the spiders are the direct enemy to all other disgusting creatures in your home.
Well, if I had to choose a disgusting bug, it's spider. Spider lives, because he's at least kind of cool, you know? Mm-hmm.
He catches all the other ones. He's like your personal defense system. Like, he's the bouncer.
Exactly. That's why I was like, you know, we can coexist. We don't have to be enemies. Yeah.
Like, it's not like the house centipede offers like low interest loans or anything. He doesn't do shit for the house. Like, spider earns his keep.
Well, there are a group of house centipede defenders out there who are like, don't kill the house centipedes, they kill the spiders. And I'm like, no, I need the spiders to kill the house centipedes.
Yeah, I'm on that side. I'm on the Montague spider side.
Yeah, so I will support the spider war effort against the house centipede.
Perfect.
That's a creature that sends me into like a visible shudder whenever I see it, whether it's like a picture or in real life. Like, whenever I see one, like, it gives me like visible shock. I hate house centipedes, bro.
Is it the greedy accumulation of legs? Why does he need so many?
No, he just looks like an eldritch horror. Like, he has no form because his fucking legs are just so massive and like, I don't know. It looks like something that should not exist.
Yeah, dude. Like, if you gave 25% of your legs, we could arm every snake on God's earth.
That's true.
We could return leg equity to this world if the centipedes would just pay their fucking leg tax.
That's true. You gotta pay the leg tax. But please, I'm ready to put a bookmark in the giant spider sightings. So, without further ado, please present your conspiracy, which has a rather intriguing name.
Okay. So, before we get to the actual meat of this discovery, I wanted to sort of shed some light on how I decided on this specific conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
So all this week, I'm spending my time researching. I'm trying to build not just the most interesting conspiracy to study, but also one that I think I can give a compelling sort of story and a compelling argument for.
Mm-hmm.
And I start with something about the mystery and horror of the Himalayas was speaking to me this week, so I wanted to do like a variety snack pack of creepy things happening in the Himalayas.
Oh, okay.
And it wasn't really there. Like, I could have spent my time with the Yeti, but that's a little more on the cryptid side. I could have spent my time on the, you know, the hidden city of gods that lives in the mountains, but there wasn't enough meat to that story.
Mm-hmm.
So I latched on to this one sort of thread of thought that aliens are using the Himalayas as like a secret forward operations base for the planet.
Mm. I see. I don't like that at all.
No, it's horrid. But there's a large number of UFO sightings and UFO extractions in the Himalayas. So that brought me to...
Really?
Yeah, it's the... Where the combination between like China in the 50s, maybe starting their rocketry, starting their science, and the Himalayas being this sort of almost buffer between, I don't even know how to describe it, like where radar can reach, what you can sort of see. It's easy to hide, yeah. Basically.
It is kind of a dead zone. The only thing going up there is like, jumbo jets, you know.
Mm-hmm. So it brought me to this particular story where these four UFOs crash in and around Nepal, and the United States freaks out and they send people to go get them and to recover those downed objects.
Hmm.
So that is my gateway to this project. Now, it's called Project Moondust.
Hell yes. Project Moondust. Let me hear it.
So I'm just going to give you just the headline of Moondust to start with. Project Moondust in 1953, during the Korean War, the Air Defense Command organized intelligence teams to deploy, recover, or exploit at the scene downed enemy personnel, equipment, and aircraft. The unit with responsibility for maintaining these teams was located at Fort Belvoir, Virginia. As the occasion never arose to use these air defense teams, the mission was assigned to Headquarters, United States Air Force, in 1957 and expanded to include the following peacetime functions. Unidentified UFOs, to investigate reliably reported UFOs within the United States, Project Moondust to recover objects and debris from space vehicles that have survived re-entry from space to Earth, and Operation Blue Fly, to expeditiously retrieve Soviet bloc equipment fallen from space.
Huh. So, what's the time frame for this?
So the United States had two previous UFO investigation teams. The second one, by the way, being called Project Grudge, which is the sickest thing of all time.
That's amazing. I love Project Grudge.
So Project Grudge and then Project Grudge 2 becomes Moondust in the 50s. It's a sort of a continuation of the theme.
Okay.
Now, you had asked for the time frame. Let me see what we got here. The beginning of the Moondust expeditions starts in 1952, when a huge explosion of UFO sightings all over the United States start to occur.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you heard of the Washington, D.C. UFO incident of 1952?
I absolutely have not.
It's amazing. So July 1952, all month, there are a crazy amount of UFO sightings. People's passenger planes are coming into DC and they're seeing these strange lights as they enter. Radars are picking up objects that they can't explain. A bunch of people in and around the DC area are seeing these either saucers, these cigar-shaped floating devices, but everyone in the city's seeing these crazy UFOs. And the United States has to respond. So,
yeah,
the crux of this conspiracy is that not moon dust being a cover-up, but Project Blue Book behind it is the cover-up.
So, okay.
So Project Blue Book is the public relations front for the moon dust operations. It's this sort of public figure that you can point to and say, see, we're investigating these occurrences, we're looking at these downed, unexplained events, and we can sort of tell people what we want them to know about these operations, and then Moondust on the side now, is actually doing it.
Now, what's that organization called, the puppet organization?
Blue Book.
Just Blue Book?
Project Blue Book.
Oh, okay, okay.
It's like the shell agency in front that the general public can interact with.
Okay. So they have like a UFO sighting hotline or something?
It's essentially a UFO sighting hotline. They record all of these incidents and they have this big log where they're like, Tommy called us and said a meteorite fell, so we went and checked it out.
Ah, okay.
So at the end of July in 1952, after all the sightings are happening, people are freaking out. There's this amazing headline I'm going to send you from, like, the West Coast, where it's like, saucers amass over Washington, D.C.
That's great.
Full UFO mania. So Albert M. Chopp, who is the press spokesman for Project Blue Book, comes to D.C. at the end of the month, and he has to calm everybody down. So they hold the largest press briefing since World War II.
Okay.
And they're like, listen, there's no aliens, there's no UFOs, it is a weather inversion, was their justification.
Weather inversion?
They said there is a warm, moist air over a cool, dry air over Washington, D.C. So it's causing radar waves to bend weirdly. It's causing stars to shine in the atmosphere where they wouldn't. It's causing these lights and sightings. So don't worry about it.
Okay.
Do you have any expertise on radar waves? Can you tell me how they work? Because I have no idea.
I've never heard of... I know a little bit about radio waves, and I've never heard about them, like, physically, like, being able to be physically seen or, like, physically interacting with something like light, you know, because of atmospheric conditions, you know, like, okay. Radio waves can get blocked by trees, you know, they can require line of sight, they can get blocked by rain, clouds, but like it's never been like, oh, the atmosphere is acting up, so if you see like giant flashing lights, like it's probably just the atmosphere fucking with the radio waves.
The extent of my radio wave knowledge is when it's cloudy out they get a signal boost. Can you confirm that, or am I just lying?
I don't think so.
Shit, my mom lied to me when I was 8. So people sort of take that explanation. They're happy to have some kind of justification.
They bit?
Absolutely.
Damn. Can we get a meteorologist in the chat to confirm that, please?
Well, that's the thing. Meteorologists come out and they're like, that's not true. The weather inversion wouldn't have that effect on all of these things, and there wasn't even a weather inversion of that magnitude at the time.
Yeah, I took high school meteorology, you know, And all I know is that hot air and cold air doesn't make a UFO. It makes a tornado.
So that's the first hint that I'm starting to say. Maybe Blue Book's a little ill intent.
Mm-hmm.
No, all of this data and all these stories that I'm going to cite come from other people's investigations. There's a huge number of resources on Moondust and Blue Book.
Okay.
Due to the Freedom of Information Act. Now, it's going to come up at the end of the story as well, but the Freedom of Information Act, signed by our boy, Lyndon B. Johnson,
mm-hmm.
says you can petition a specific sections of the government for inquiries, and they have to respond to you. They have to cite logs, they have to cite transcripts, they have to give you the information that you request, or send you in the direction to somebody who would have that.
Okay.
So we have these huge number of documents and stories of people talking about Moondust internally. There's this amazing transcript of a conversation between these two guys, and they're talking about the unit who fills Moondust. I have no idea how to talk about this squadron, the 4602nd Air Intelligence Service Squadron.
4602nd?
Is that number too big? Because that's what it's cited as all over the documents.
No. It's not too big.
So
Air Force has like 4-digit shit.
So the 4602nd Air Intelligence Service Squadron during the World War was a squadron.
Which who, one?
Two. WW DOS. Okay. They were a unit who responded and exploited downed aircraft, whether it be to protect civilians, save people who've crashed, or to gather the fallen wreckage for either retention, research, or exploitation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they get moved over to Project Moondust after the war. And the transcript is like, hey, I heard the 4602nd are coming to Fort Belvoir. And the other guy's like, wow, really? Those are like the Black Ops dudes. Those are the undercover guys. This must be really crazy. And they're like, yeah, I didn't even know they existed. And he's like, nah, dude, my buddy's in it. He knows.
Hmm.
So there's this internal mystique. What's up?
Like, why is it like, I don't know, why was that conversation recorded?
I have no idea. I don't know if the army, like, just keeps memos and transcripts of conversations that happened during the time.
Hmm.
But,
what's up? Not that it's a big deal. Not that it's a big deal, that's a weird context to record conversation.
And we have reports. Now, you'll have better context for this. Tell me if this sounds weird.
Okay.
After World War II, the 4602nd gets sent over to Moondust, and they begin training in parachuting. Okay.
Okay.
Horseback riding.
Okay.
Animal packing, skiing, mountain climbing.
Okay.
Is that something the Air Boys need to know?
I mean, not normally. I mean, parachuting, yes, but I don't know why. Like, horseback riding? That doesn't even make sense in the context of Project Moondust on Everest. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Animal packing? That doesn't make sense in context of Everest. You know? The only thing I can think of is maybe if, like, this aircraft crashed down in, like, some really thick-ass woods and they couldn't get to it with, like, on fucking, you know, they couldn't get to it with, like, a Jeep or something, then, like,
yeah,
maybe they'll take the horse out, you know?
Just go out, like, rock out and go get it.
Yeah. Because you said these guys are, like, they're hopping down on the fucking downed aircraft?
Yeah, they're... And in the context of Moondust, they're the ones who will go out and get the craft. Go out and see what's going down.
Okay. I mean, mountain climbing makes sense if they're doing this out in Nepal.
Mm-hmm.
But horseback riding and animal packing? I don't know. That sounds kind of weird to me.
Well, we, from these reports, have a couple of pretty cool Moondust missions I can tell you about, such as the Nepali mission, where we learned about it from the transcripts from the embassies, where the United States says, like, listen, Moondust is coming out, so, like, let them get into the country, send them on out, and see what these objects are.
Huh.
There's places like they were sent to the Republic of Congo, Morocco, Sudan, South Africa, Bolivia. All over the world they're being sent.
Okay.
And also domestically, they were sent to Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. And there was this crazy incident in Alaska that it kind of chips away at my side of the story that's sort of postulating that this is a cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
So the story goes, there is a unit doing, I don't know, airplane shit, maneuvers in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And the story goes that the guy is flying and he starts to see a light towards Jupiter, which can be seen in the sky, in the atmosphere at this time. And there's this whole correspondence between the base and the fighter talking about, yep, I see the light. Yeah, it just went past me. No big deal. And he continues on through the mission.
Huh.
But 4 months later, the pilot goes to an Alaskan newspaper and he goes, yeah, dude, this spaceship was flying next to me and I had to evade it. It was following me. And he makes up this whole crazy story for the Alaskan press.
What the hell?
That doesn't match the transcripts that we have today.
Huh.
So what's up?
His hires were probably just like, hey, you shut the fuck up about whatever you saw up there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like, I don't know. It kind of makes sense, because if that's like the first encounter with something, it's like, okay, we need to try and figure out what the fuck's going on before we tell everybody.
Yeah, before you sort of let the goose out.
Yeah. But, that's wild.
And I don't necessarily need to jump to dudes in spacecraft. Like, UFO doesn't necessarily need to mean the same thing in my mind as it means to the army, you know?
Right.
Whether it's some crazy Ruski ship, like a Chinese rocket they've never seen before, whether it's a space debris, like UFO has sort of changed in context for people like us, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm sure back then, like when they were like, hey, we got a UFO, that meant like it's actually an unidentified flying object until we identify it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not like, hey, we got a UFO. Oh, it's aliens.
It's, you know? It's the actual saucer. But as the documents begin to be hoarded and the entire story begins to be told, we see that this classified document in 1969 from the Air Force formally terminates Project Blue Book.
Uh-huh.
It says reports of UFOs which could affect national security would continue to be handled through the standard Air Force procedures designed for this purpose.
Hmm.
So they're no longer putting up this front, you know?
Yeah.
But
so they were just, they just dissolved Project Blue Book?
They dissolved Blue Book, which was at one singular room office and like three personnel. So like the cover up, the shell in front was no longer being run, and then they were just handling things internally from now on. But the Project Blue Book has this wonderful huge list of just like, yeah, Chuck out in Tennessee gave me a call and we found the meteor.
That's awesome. How many like calls did they get?
Thousands. Damn. Thousands of missions.
Damn.
And
that's crazy.
Then internal telegrams, internal memos continue to use the Moondust name well into the 70s.
Really?
So they stopped just sort of putting that public face on it.
Yeah.
Now,
that's crazy as fuck.
The one that really made me want to dig into this, the one that really made me want to sort of present this story to everybody, is a more contemporary event.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sergeant Clifford E. Stone, in the 90s, I believe, he sends a Freedom of Information Act request for information regarding Moondust and these sort of events.
Okay.
He's, I believe, retired sergeant. And he's petitioning the Air Force and all of these things to get this information. And they repeatedly evade him. They're like, we would love to give you this information, but it doesn't exist. What is Moondust? What is this what is this thing you're asking for? And he continually talks about it, continually sends in requests, so much so that his senator, the New Mexico Senator Jeff Bingham, has to ask the Air Force himself for this information.
Huh.
So Senator Bingham sends in the request, and he is responded to by Lieutenant Colonel John E. Madison. There is no Project Moondust. These missions have never existed.
No way.
So even the senator doesn't get the truth. Like, they don't want to let this information out. Now, eventually, the Air Force has to roll back. They have to, because of Freedom of Information Act documents that get released, they see Moondust everywhere. And they're like, nothing was ever recovered, shot down, or ascertained by these missions is the official stance now.
Huh.
They're like, yeah, it existed. Yeah, we did some stuff. We checked out meteorites, but we don't have anything suspicious is their official stance. But they had to turn around on that stance after being caught in a lie.
Why were they guarding it so closely if nothing happened, though, you know?
Exactly. That's the whole reason I wanted to talk about it, was why would they be so defensive if it is just Sally saw a satellite in San Francisco?
Maybe, like, maybe they kept getting hit with the Freedom of Information, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they just kept dodging while they waited for the good shit from Moondust to get upgraded to a more secret, like, clearance status, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, fuck, we need to make the good shit that happened top secret, you know? We're not ready to release it yet.
That's exactly what happened, because there's another memo that says Moondust was compromised and officially dissolved. Like, they internally stopped using the term Moondust.
Compromised how?
They gave no information as to what compromised meant. So it seems like they either changed the project name so they could evade these questions, or they tucked it down deep enough that Freedom of Information couldn't reach. Because if you file and you say, give me everything you have about Moondust, and they're like, sorry, we don't have anything under that file, because they renamed it after 69 when they closed Blue Book, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them another chance to bob and weave.
Yeah. It seems like they were just like, fuck, we need to clear this red tape so we can like hide the Munda shit more.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And the entire story has this sort of veil of Cold War secrets, Cold War bureaucracy, like difference between public mm-hmm. good, public defense, and public information, you know?
Yeah. I was getting like Red Scare vibes at the beginning when you were like, yeah, they sent an air defense unit out to Nepal.
Oh, yeah.
Right on the border of China, you know.
And like, for that specific example, I am willing to believe like a prototype Chinese rocket falls in the Himalayas or something and they send the team.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely in the realm of possibility.
But it's all of this mystique that doesn't just seem like wartime mystique.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
But this is one of those things where we don't have a tight bow. It's just me sitting here with a big question mark going, and what's going to be the next memo? What's going to be the next thing we find out?
The next moon dust leak.
Yeah, whatever we find out what the next operation's name was, or whatever inexplicable thing, because there's stories all over of something falls, something hits the Earth, it's this crazy, unknowable, like, sphere of aluminum that burned for 5 days straight, and then a United States team comes and extracts it.
Yeah, that's like some textbook X-Files stuff right there.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I know a couple years ago, the government just declassified a shitload of documents on UFOs and shit.
Yeah, I've not dug into that particular section of it.
Yeah. But
I'm really interested to see if that will, or if it was like tactical release, you know?
Have you heard of the Nimitz incident?
For what?
The USS Nimitz incident.
Oh, what happened on the Nimitz?
They went out to the ocean. It's a Navy carrier. And so they go out to the ocean to do some training exercises. This is just a brief rundown. I don't have any formal research on the topic, but basically there's video evidence of this Navy pilot flying around and shit, and like he's like, yeah, I don't know what that is, and like straight up you see like a fucking UFO on the show, or like on this dude's like plane dash cam, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You see a fucking UFO, you know, and
like a Earth UFO? Like, we don't know what country this is, or like a...
No, nobody knew what this was.
Okay.
Like, it's some extraterrestrial shit, dude. The Nimitz incident is wild. I recommend you go check that out if you got the spare time, but like, there's interviews with the pilot and shit, and like, basically the government was like, yeah, we don't know what this was.
Do you know what year that was?
Let me look it up really quick. It was recent.
Okay.
Like, cosmically recent, I guess. USS Nimitz UFO encounter. 2004.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's worth noting. UFO sightings exploded after the Second World War. Like, exponentially, people are seeing more shit. And the use of radar causing anomalies drops off right when it goes from physical to digital radar.
Yeah.
So maybe it is a case of us not knowing... what that flying thing is, because we haven't had rocketry for but 15 years, or the government has, you know, all the well-known mm-hmm. explanations, like ships are being tested, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
and I know the skeptics' easy answer is like, oh, well, duh, there's going to be more UFO sightings because we're finally taking to the skies very regularly after World War II, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But on that same note, like, we never really had a reason to look up before. If that makes sense, you know?
It's also the idea that if something were to take an interest in our worthless primate planet,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't it be when we're getting close, when the space race starts, when we're starting to go out there and look and send radio yeah. waves and send satellites and start getting out of the planet? Wouldn't that be
yeah. okay? That's it's time. That's a very pivotal moment for our civilization, the planet as a whole. So, like, if we're being observed by the Mantis Men, like, this is like a pivotal moment for us. If they're observing, they'll be like, oh shit, look what the humans are doing.
Mm-hmm. They're actually starting. You
know, their asses are getting to space. That's wild. Everyone come check this shit out, you know?
Yeah, you tell the entire Galactic Council.
Uh-huh. Load up, like, hey, load up the Greys, Blofgar.
Mm-hmm.
We need to go fucking watch the humans shoot their rockets and shit. It's gonna be crazy.
Sorry, Bleemnix, you space poke, you're on Earth duty this month.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. I don't think we can rule out aliens. Ever. They're here.
It's just the mystique. It's just the effort that they go to dodge that makes me want to know why.
Yeah. No, there's for sure a reason. And I believe it's so that they can take the good shit and reclassify it so that it doesn't get released publicly, you know?
Also, if I'm a secret shadow organization in the United States government, here's a free tip to you, NSA, on my YouTube channel. Quit giving your projects sick names. I would have never clicked on it if it wasn't called Moondust.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, like, I'm gonna be, like, infinitely more curious and wanting to dive deeper into a project called, like, I don't know, like Project Moonsphere or like something. When you make it sound something crazy like that, everyone's gonna be like, oh
yeah,
what's that about? But if you call it something like, I don't know, Project File Cabinet Reorganization,
I'm scrolling over.
Yeah, like, just to, like, I don't know why other parts of the government can do it well, you know, like this thing they're trying to pass right now, the Earn It Act, that doesn't really have a very, like, I don't know, that doesn't have a very surprising name. Like, that name doesn't raise any red flags alone, you know? So, I mean, no. Other branches of the government are doing it just fine.
Apparently, like, lying on your bill by giving it a disingenuous title is a new tactic,
I guess. Or, you know, just give it like a super long, just give it a serial number, basically.
If it was just numbers, that's the easy answer. Like an encrypted title.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we should stop giving them free tips because they're always listening.
God, I hope they are.
Yeah, I mean, if you do start, I'm going to try and patent this right now so that if you do start doing that, you're going to have to cut me a check. But in the meantime, folks, remember to keep your eyes open and everyone have a great day tomorrow. I know what day it is. You know what day it is. Enjoy it.
You're worth it.
This is Mad Tower Radio, ending frequency.